Welcome to H2 Tech Talk, the web's most sustainable podcast and your premier destination for expert insights into the global hydrogen sector. Dive into our informative series as we explore the latest advancements, news, and trends in the realm of sustainable energy. H2 Tech is a leading source of up-to-date, compelling discussions around hydrogen technology. Don't forget to subscribe and share to stay connected with the world of hydrogen innovation and sustainable solutions. Now, here's this week's episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of H2 Tech Talk. Today, we are joined by Andrew Gillis. He is the CEO of Aurora Hydrogen.
Hey, Tyler. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Good. You look great.
Thanks.
That's a good-looking suit you have on. I know it's a podcast, so people don't have the visuals, so we can do
descriptive
audio here.
So
Tyler's looking great.
Yeah, and Andrew has a nice Canadian pin on his
maple
coat.
Leaf pin,
like a maple leaf. There you go. I like it. I'm a fan. So, Andrew, how about you start by telling us a little bit about Aurora and your role as a CEO?
Sure. So we're, as you said, Canadian company, Edmonton-based. We're developing a hydrogen production technology that uses natural gas to make hydrogen and solid carbon. It's a really efficient process. It's unique in that it uses microwave energy directly. So for people who are familiar with methane pyrolysis, which is the class of technology that we're working in here, we're not using a plasma. We're not using a catalyst. So we do direct carbon heating with microwaves, which is extremely efficient. And then we're able to take natural gas, heat it up, decompose the hydrocarbons, so principally methane, and we end up with hydrogen gas and a unique solid carbon product and no CO2 emissions. And we think that we can do that at a low cost and in a distributed way. So making hydrogen where required, at the scale required, eliminating the costs associated with hydrogen transportation.
All right, so what are your plans to do with the hydrogen and the solid carbon?
So I think there's, on the hydrogen side, there's two markets we want to address. So the first one is industrial decarbonization, because we're starting small, but we do think that we can get to industrially relevant scales with the technology. So right now, conventional hydrogen production with sea methane reforming produces somewhere between 9, 10, 11 kilograms of CO2 per kilogram of hydrogen. So it's a highly CO2 emitting process. And that's a problem that, a lot of the industrial operators are very committed to solving. Just for example, the corporate investors in Aurora include Shell and Chevron and Williams, who all have big decarbonization commitments. So see Aurora as a pathway to, again, speaking for Aurora, not on behalf of our corporate investors. But, there's certainly an opportunity for us to help them decarbonize some of those existing hydrogen operations when we reach scale. And that's a big market. However, the thing that people really get excited about when it comes to hydrogen is the opportunity for decarbonizing more traditional chemical fuels like diesel, gasoline, natural gas, aviation fuel in really hard to decarbonize sectors. So the places where it doesn't make sense to electrify, and we're certainly not trying to compete with electrification. An electric motor is a very efficient device. We're not trying to claim that, we're going to use hydrogen where electricity is very well suited. But, for a lot of these applications, if you think about heavy road freight, rail, marine, places where applications, the way that I'd like to describe them are on the transportation side, where there are two factors that make it very difficult to electrify. You've either got high asset utilization, so you don't want to have that asset down for charging. If you want to be using it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you don't want to suffer those charging times. Or when you have to haul heavy freight. So you don't want to be using your payload capacity moving batteries around. Like these are applications where hydrogen makes a lot of sense. But the problem right now is that hydrogen is too expensive to compete with traditional chemical fuels like diesel, for example. You can get low-cost hydrogen at an SMR facility, but as soon as you want to move it away from that facility, you're going to pay 2, 3, 4, 5 times the production cost just to transport it. So maybe you're making hydrogen for $1 or $2 a kilogram, but if you want to move it 100 miles away from that production facility, you're going to be paying $10, $12, $15, maybe $20 a kilogram for that hydrogen. So where we fit in is we think that our technology can actually enable the use of hydrogen in many of these new applications by providing it at a low cost at the point of use. So our view here is that you move the energy using existing natural gas and electricity infrastructure and then make the hydrogen where you need it at a low cost in a very energy efficient way. So then you're not paying these high transportation charges. And in that way, we think we can be cost competitive and in some cases cost advantaged relative to diesel.
Gotcha. So you have your strategy is basically to cut out the middleman entirely. No transport, let's just, you know, produce it where it's going to be used.
Yeah, and it's even more than just a middleman sort of thing. It's because hydrogen is such a light gas, it's very expensive to compress or liquefy and move around. So to the extent we're able to cut out that energy penalty of having to move the hydrogen, we think we can deliver it in a cost-effective way for many of these new applications.
Got it. So how does you touched this a little bit, but how does your technology compare to SMR with carbon capture or electrolysis?
Comparing it to SMR, so we're not using water in the reaction. So SMR reacts methane and water and generally uses combusting natural gas as a heat source. So we don't do any combustion. All of our heat is provided by electricity through very efficient microwave energy.
Okay.
So that allows us to produce this without any CO2 generation whatsoever in the process. And if we're going to get, you told me it's okay to get really technical sometimes. So if we're going to get really technical, this affects electrolysis. So it is, if you're breaking water apart, it takes a lot of energy to do that. The bonds in water are between hydrogen, oxygen, and water are extremely strong, and it takes a lot of energy to overcome those bonds. And this is the reason that electrolysis is fundamentally a very high energy process. And to the extent that you have to pay money for electricity, it will always be a very expensive process. On the other hand, breaking apart a methane molecule is quite easy. Relatively speaking, the bonds in methane are quite weak, and it doesn't take much energy to break those apart. So that's what we're doing, is only breaking apart methane. And then SMR is kind of in the middle, where it's breaking apart methane and it's breaking apart water. So the energy entitlement of SMR is higher than of just methane pyrolysis. So we're starting from a very low energy position based on the fundamental chemistry of it. And then we add in this very energy efficient microwave energy. So we're, for example, 80% less electricity per kilogram of hydrogen compared to electrolysis. So that puts us in a fundamentally low cost position relative to these other technologies.
All right, Andrew, when should organizations consider using methane pyrolysis?
Fundamentally, what we think is that it's an opportunity to provide low cost hydrogen. So, you know, there are situations where relative to electrolysis or SMR plus CCS, there may be more appropriate situations to use those. So for example, if somebody has easy access to low cost renewable electricity, well, let's just say low cost electricity. You know, if somebody has free electricity or low cost electricity and access to clean water, then electrolysis could be a reasonable solution for that. Right now, because SMR is the only option at scale, if somebody has extremely high centralized hydrogen demands, then SMR plus CCS could be a very practical solution to that. I mean, and that's what a lot of the industrial operators are looking at, is adding CCS to existing SMR facilities. But for anything else, you know, where electricity is expensive, where water is scarce, we believe that methane pyrolysis can be a great solution for hydrogen in those applications. But we do have, you know, just have to be completely realistic that it is a developing technology right now. There's one commercial operation for methane pyrolysis right now, and there are several different pathways to perform methane pyrolysis. You know, there are some people using catalysts, there are some people using plasmas, there are some people using molten metal technologies, using combustion-related technologies. So there's a lot out there. It's a competitive space, but we certainly do think that we have a fundamentally low-energy pathway even in that space. You know, and if I'm going to be a bit immodest for a second, you know, we think that, you know, Shell and Chevron and Williams have teams of people vetting all these different technologies and decided that Aurora was the right bet to make in the space. So we appreciate the support and we think we've got something here.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. You have the right people backing you. You know, if they're interested, then you got to be doing something right.
Yeah,
you know?
Hope so.
So let's switch to talk about policies a little bit. What's your perspective on the hydrogen policies that have come out recently?
They definitely help. To be honest, what would help right now even more is certainty around the policies. So we've had a lot of prospective projects in the U.S. that recently have been a little bit paused with the hydrogen production tax credit uncertainty. you know, going back and forth for comments. And, you know, some things were a bit less favorable than people thought they were going to be, especially around, you know, electricity supply and ability to really pinpoint what the emissions profile of natural gas is. So like getting technical right now, you know, something that affects us, that affects any process that uses methane, the calculation for the credit just assumes a single value for upstream methane emissions across the U.S., which is absolutely not the case. You know, different natural gas assets have different emissions profiles. And Williams, for example, is doing a great job working to trace the emissions profiles of molecules. You know, so that's absolutely something that needs to be included in the regulations to drive down upstream methane emissions, which are a source of scope 2 emissions associated with the process. As well, there's an oversight around the inclusion of new technologies. So, for example, methane pyrolysis was not named as a technology pathway.
I was going to ask about that.
Along with a lot of other prospective technologies. So these were comments that were provided back to the regulators by Aurora, by other people in the industry to make sure this stuff gets included. Because I can't imagine that it was anybody's intention to stifle innovation and not recognize the opportunity for new technology to come in and solve problems. So we're definitely hopeful that all of this will get included in the revised language. But right now there's a lot of uncertainty around that. And, you know, uncertainty makes people nervous and it stops people from moving forward quickly. So we're really hoping that we get, you know, updates along those dimensions and higher certainty in the very near future.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard, like I said, I was going to ask, because even like carbon capture, you know, there are blue hydrogen, I guess you would say, they don't seem to want to give the credits to those companies. So I was curious where pyrolysis would stand.
Yeah, it is an uncertain place. I think that in the U.S., it's, for example, better than it is in Europe, where, you know, it is very policy prescriptive. One of the things that I think the regulators have done a good job of in the U.S. is focusing on total carbon intensity, which is great. You know, like, let's be technology agnostic. Let's focus on carbon intensity, which was the message at the start. And then it got a little bit more prescriptive in the drafting. So we're trying to walk back the tightening of the regulations. And I heard a funny phrase yesterday, regulatory density. You know, Europe has a lot of regulatory density and the U.S. has less. So we think there's an opportunity to reduce the regulatory density here, you know, set a target and then let private business figure out how they meet that target.
I'm going to use that term. Something.
I think it's a good one. I like that.
Yeah, it might be a title of a future episode or something. I have to think about that one. So what do you think is needed that we don't have for the hydrogen economy to scale?
You know, I'm going to talk my own book here and really just say innovation. You know, we do think we have a technology that's on a development path that can produce low-cost hydrogen. You know, and a lot of people do talk about incentives, and for some technologies, you need it, right? Like if you're talking about electrolysis, for example, and they're going to run it on renewable energy, like there needs to be a lot of incentive to make that economic. Carbon capture, same thing. You know, you need some incentive to make that economic. But we think, based on the energy associated with our process, we just need to keep walking our technology forward. Because ultimately, when you talk about energy sources, people want to pay the least amount of money possible for the energy they use. And we think that through technical innovation, we can make that happen, be in a cost competitive position without emissions, you know, and I think that's the opportunity associated with innovation. So if I'm going to say anything, it's just simply supporting innovators, supporting startups, supporting new technology to bring these things to market quickly and in a way that is unencumbered, you know, reducing the regulatory density associated with having new technology come to market.
So before I let you go, Andrew, let me ask you, what is next for Aurora?
Right now, we're constructing our pilot plant just outside Edmonton, Canada. It's going to be in the order of 200 kilograms of hydrogen per day. So we're calling it a pilot plant, but we think that's a commercially viable scale. Just to locate that volume in a practical sense, that's enough hydrogen to fuel 10 buses continuously. So we think this is something that could be deployed for a vehicle fleet, for small natural gas blending applications. So we tend to have the pilot plant operational later this year, and then be out for commercial deployment and scale up at the same time in 2025. So as I mentioned, we think it's a scalable technology. So we intend to keep hitting increments of scale and eventually get up to industrially relevant volumes. But as we're walking that scale up path, deploy into the markets where it makes sense.
Fair enough. So do you have any closing thoughts, Andrew, that you'd like to get out to our listeners?
Oh, one of the things we didn't talk about was the carbon product. So in methane pyrolysis, right. Yeah. one of the things that people who are familiar with methane pyrolysis identify is that, you know, there aren't markets deep enough to take the carbon that is produced by the process. And that's generally true for most processes. And this is where I'll, you know, make some self-interested and competitive comments. So, you know, say that up front. I'm aware I'm doing that. Most methane pyrolysis produces a carbon black, which is a carbon nanomaterial. It's used for ink, paint pigments, tire fillers. That's a general market for it. And that's about, you know, 10 to 12 million tons a year of carbon, which sounds like a lot. But if we're talking about the volumes of hydrogen that people are talking about and wanting to produce, you'd really flood those markets very quickly. So what we need to do is open up new carbon markets. And this is one of the unique things about Aurora, because of our heating mechanism using microwaves, we actually grow carbon particles. So we make more of a carbon sand product, like very much like if you saw this, it looks like it's an elementally pure black carbon sand. And for us, that is much deeper use cases. You know, we've been investigating it as a common feedstock for a lot of high-value carbon products. So we've had people turn it into graphene, synthetic graphite for batteries. We've been looking at a variety of applications in the steelmaking market, which is an order of magnitude larger than the carbon black market. And ultimately, we think it could be very well suited as a construction sand. You know, replacing sand, like the mineral sand fraction in concrete, asphalt, road base, earthworks, any of these sort of applications. And I mean, at that point, you're in billions of tons a year. So we do think that for the carbon that we produce, there are lots of potential markets to address and lots of potential outlets, and specifically outlets that should be close to where we're producing hydrogen. You know, if we're producing hydrogen in a distributed way, near population centers, near industrial areas, there's the same places where you have offtakes for many of these different uses.
I'd be interested to see, you know, how y'all utilize the carbon moving forward. Are there any choice? Because of course you have, carbon black, and then you have pure carbon. Do you have like a choice? How does that, you know, work where you determine what the outcome is?
You know what? We got very lucky. It comes down to this novel heating method that we're employing. So you end up with a carbon black, just to get technical for a sec. If you're using a thermal heating process and you nucleate the carbon in the gas phase, you end up with these nanoparticles, like these carbon black particles. And that's what most of the, like if you're using plasma jet, if you're using combustion heating, if you're using sort of any of these more conventional heating mechanisms. But what we're doing is we're actually heating carbon with microwaves. So the heat source in our reactor is the carbon particles. And then the new carbon grows on top of these existing carbon particles. So it just has to do with the unique and novel heating method that we're using.
Gotcha. All right. But let go ahead and let you go. Now, Andrew, I do appreciate you speaking to Aurora and your technologies and the pathways for the future.
Yeah, very happy to do it, Tyler. Thanks for taking an interest. Anytime you want to circle back and hear about an update, I'll be here and happy to join.
Absolutely. We have more we could discuss right now, to be honest. But yeah, thank you again. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in to another episode.
Thanks for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to subscribe and share to stay connected with the world of hydrogen innovation and sustainable solutions. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to Tyler.Campbell@gulfenergyinfo.com.